So it was one of those things that you never know how it's going to turn out. I had an opportunity shortly after that to run another company, believe it or not, in Memphis, Tennessee. And I know I saw John Siebling. He's on the board here today. And through that interview, it was just one of those little things went off and said, "Hey, you don't need to be here." And I basically told him to take my name off the list. My brother and I had started a business here. We relocated back in this area where I grew up on a farm. And we were running the business, located C3 Church. Went to Pastor Matt with India. I said I could be doing a heck of a lot more than I'm doing and at the church. And donated the first couple of years just as a service. And then one thing led to another and ended up coming on staff here in 2004. So that's a little bit about my background. So I am not a pastor, although maybe everybody's a minister, so to speak. But I do think as part of this thing that God's put together here, it is very, very important. I tell people that my life used to be nothing but smoking, drinking, fighting, and foul language until I decided to quit the church softball team. So I tell you that because I was one of those professional Christians at a very traditional church. Knew that, I mean, I pushed myself away from contemporary type church until I came here and fell in love with Pastor Matt and his teaching, a life-giving church, and everything's falling off here. And I understand all that stuff completely now, and I'm really planted, and hopefully that'll mean something to some of you guys. So do we have any aspiring church planters in here? People that are just sort of thinking, just sort of coming here checking us out? Come on. And that's great. Most of you may have already started your church and maybe at a next phase of what I need to do next and that kind of thing. I like to describe the church is the way we look at it here is there's three pieces. There's a cause, there's a community, and there's a corporation when you're structured the way we are. And the cause is to grow the kingdom. Community is building relationships. And as many of you know that's been in the business world or connected to anything, there's a corporate side to all of it. And Pastor Matt is certainly, and all the senior pastors, all of you guys that are senior pastors, you guys are called to ministry. You know how to deal with people, love people, and all that kind of stuff. I know how to do that too. But there's a piece of that that most pastors sort of push away from, and that's the corporate side. Man, how do I do this? How do I set up the structure? And how do I hire? And how do I fire? And all that kind of stuff. And that, I don't know where any of you are thinking about church administration, but if you're thinking about that, there's no better way, I don't think, than to serve God than coming along a senior pastor who has a vision to reach everybody he possibly can for Jesus Christ and help him in that cause. And that's made a great partnership with Pastor Matt and I, and I would challenge you to do that. And I think we live in a time that I like to say, I've been out of the business world now for almost 8 years, but I don't think I've ever felt more stretched. Any of you guys feel like you're stretched a little bit with the economy and not knowing what to do and trying to figure out what to do? Uncertain times, right? And I think you have to look at that Pastor Matt, that's what makes the partnership so great. In the business world, I was all jammed up and worried about what I could do about things. In this side of things, I worry about that a lot, but the pastor always reminds me that God's in control. And I think if we keep that in mind, that's a key to growing your business or growing the church. And I was reading a study. I'll share this with you, that essentials and non-essentials. And this is sort of an interesting study that Barna put together. And he says in a lifetime, we spend 6 months at traffic lights waiting for them to change. This is a lifetime. We spend a year searching through desk clutter looking for misplaced objects. I mean, I never do that. My assistant here, great assistant, is Christina Harrell, and she can attest that I never look through my desk clutter for a misplaced object. We spend 5 years waiting in lines, 3 years in meetings. Anybody read that book, Meeting, Death by Meeting? There you go. Somebody has. Countless hours learning how to operate 20,000 different things, from a popcorn machine to can openers to iPhones, cell phones. I'm convinced, guys, that if we were as passionate about our spouse as we are a cell phone or iPhone. We could cut the divorce rate in half. I mean, we go ballistic when we lose one or can't find it, don't we? And so my point here is, if we're not careful, we spend a lot of time on the things that are not essential, and not enough time, quality time with Jesus. And that would be one thing I got to tell you, that we know that God is above all this stuff, that He's in control. And I would challenge you to pray that God's right on time in your lives. He's never late. And I refer you to Ecclesiastes 3:11 that says He has made everything beautiful in its time. And with that, I'd like to move on to some keys as far as the way things came together here. They may be different for you, but I think they work everywhere. And that the first key that I want to talk about is a senior pastor. I don't know where you are in the administrative role at your church, but at C3 or at probably any, whether it's denominational or non-denominational, I would challenge you for the first thing, and I think that's in your notes there. Number one is a senior pastor. I would challenge you to get on his agenda, to really understand his heart and what he is, what his objective is, how he desires to do this business we call kingdom building, how he desires to reach people, how he desires to minister. That's key. I came on staff here with a lot of experience, thinking I was going to work maybe 20 hours a week, be a pie job, and go home. The people I see coming in from the outside seem to think church is this little thing that they can come in on the weekends and go home. There's no work to it. And I was quick to find out that that is not true at all. And I won't go into all the story, but I can tell you there's a lot of hours and a lot of time spent in church or spent here on the job. And I quickly found out that I was trying to place my agenda in action. And how many of you know that doesn't necessarily work when there's a bigger name or a bigger boss in the house? And the problem I had was I wasn't in sync with what the pastor's thought was and the way we go about making things inviting for all people. So we had a little conflict on the front end. And the thing that I do now, more than anything else, is I serve God, number one, but I make sure that I'm in sync with Him when it comes to growing the kingdom. And oh yeah, we have council, we have executive staff meetings, we have things that we get together on a team that we agree to, but once we leave the room and agree to it, we're all about it. So it's not this stuff over here, I don't know why he's doing that, or I don't know why he's doing this. We are about what we set out to do. And so I would tell you that if you don't have, or if you're thinking about, or wherever you are, that you develop some kind of a mission statement. That's number B. We use and have always, Pastor Matt set this up. It was in place when I came on staff. We haven't deviated from it. We haven't changed. It's real hope for real people in a real world. And we follow that up by adding to that all our ministries and whatever we do is based on expose, equip, and experience. And that's we follow that by all of the things that we have here. We have the weekend celebration. That's our service on the weekend to attract as many people as we can. We have ministry teams that volunteer to, most of those are volunteers that assist in that weekend celebration. We have connect groups that meet in the homes, and then we have the next generation, and we have students. We have about five things, and that's all we do as a church. I mean, those are the things that we dwell on. And I don't know if you've read the book, The Simple Church, but we probably turn away as many requests as we honor when it comes to people wanting to start this or start that. And we find out that is a way that we can keep things simple. You guys tracking with me? We've had a lot of interference, but are you tracking with me on number one?
Yes.
Okay. So I would challenge you, whatever you're called to do, is develop a mission statement around that. And then when you get in any meeting, you can remind yourself, are we on mission? Are we about what we're called to do? And that just helps you stay on track. The second thing is a foundation. I think it's so key that you think through and establish how you want to set up, what's the foundation of your ministry going to look like? What's the foundation of the church that you plant going to look like? And
There's no organization that I found out there that does it any better than ARC, because you have such a broad range of great pastors that pour into this, and they could give you an example. But if you're in a denomination, I think you do find some obstacles, and there's some breakout sessions here on people that were in denomination. I'm not knocking Baptists. I was a Southern Baptist myself, but you know that they are deacon-led, elder-led in the Baptist world. They're deacon-led, and the pastor has some input, but he can be voted out, so to speak. One of the hardest things to do if you're trying to move from a denominational church to a life-giving, pastor-led church is change the way you do business. This church was originally founded that way, and the first thing that we did when we came on staff, that since the church was being run this way by Pastor Matt, was change our bylaws to a pastor-led church. And the way I look at it is the pastor is the CEO. We have what we call in the business world would be a board of directors. We call them a management team. And the management team is composed of either five to, I think, a maximum of nine people appointed by the pastor, and they make all the decision on acquiring land, debt, things like this. They are not at every meeting that's decided during the church. They are there for input on big decisions. For example, when we acquired our construction loan for this building, the management team met, they heard what we were doing, and they voted on that. Same thing with permanent financing, so on. When we acquire the land, that's what the management team does, acts as a board of directors. The third thing in those bylaws are a leadership team, which is simply a support group for the pastor. They would be in the traditional church like elders, deacons. They're there to pray for the pastor, be called on to assist people or organization. They're leaders in the church. They are appointed by the pastor. And the fourth piece of this bylaw or governing document is overseers. And these are pastors. We have five that are outside of the church. Some of them are on ARC, others are not. But they have one duty, and that's to provide accountability. So if there's something going on with the leadership in the church, the senior pastor, we call on the board of overseers. They would come in and take control, whatever that situation might be. We pray that that doesn't happen when it comes to moral issues, but we all know that we're not going to live forever. That situation will present itself at some time. That's when they would be called in to help the church raise up the next pastor. So that's how our bylaws are established. Second piece is a budget. And I don't think the budget is something that is, I don't know how you guys work, but when I came on board, it was like a moving target. We really didn't have any thought process put into it. But we have over time been able to develop some key things that we track. And I'll tell you this, that I think from the person who runs the administration, led by the senior pastor, that person is the stewardship of the church will follow your stewardship. It'll follow your integrity. So this position carries a huge amount of responsibility. And you need to really think through how you're going to designate those kind of things and what controls are you going to put in. But a budget, there's a lot of software out there, but the things that you have to track is revenue, what's your tithes and offerings, are you going to do a capital campaign, how does that play into that? And then these are things on how to budget, so to speak. Expenses, the things that we track on expenses are the same model that we use for the ministry teams we use. For example, we have the weekend celebration. That is a budget line item. All the expenses tied with that. Family ministry or next generation, that is our children department. We have that in a column with everything that's tied to that. Experience ministry, we call that. That's our care groups, our first touch, our connect groups. Music and worship is under that subtitle. Other needs, you always got to count on that, is supplies, office material, utility, postage, technology, and all that. Then I guess one of the key pieces of a budget is how in the world do you manage personnel? And do you have a percentage of your budget that you're going to say this is it? We use 35% here. When our personnel and benefits get up to about 35% of the budget, that's where we feel comfortable. I mean, it may be different in other places. Missions is, of course, something you don't want to leave out. We made a decision about 2 years ago to go to 10% of our revenue goes to missions. And that's a great thing. It's working out super because you may have a budget that calls for 8% going to missions, but of some number that's established at the first of the year, we take 10% of whatever is given each week, and it goes in our mission budget, even though we have line items that we support, like 22 missions that's paid monthly. This number hopefully grows to a point that that the pastor or the executive team can make a decision on to maybe plant a church in Africa or this type of thing. So you establish a pretty good pool of money if you use a principle that we're going to put 10% of our tithing offerings in missions. Are you guys tracking with me?
Yes.
Y'all up with me? Because I'm moving pretty fast because I want to make sure we save some time for some questions. Another thing that I hear from administrators or churches is, how in the world do you control as you grow? How do you control what takes place? Who approves? How do you handle your approvals when the children's minister needs this, and when the connect group people need this, and assimilation needs this? What we use here is we put in place is after you've been on staff, or if you're on staff as a minister, we have a credit card program. Some people may like it, some people don't. But we seem to find it works very well, provided you do put a couple of controls in. No one can use their credit card for over a $200 purchase. If it's a $200 purchase or more, then it requires a check request approval that comes through our desk or our department for approval. Then they're allowed to go out to the purchase or the person they report to. So the way we're structured here, it's a senior pastor, and then we have two sides. We have the corporate side, and we have the ministry side. So if Martha runs the ministry side, the senior pastor's wife, as an executive. So if the student pastor, for example, needed a microphone, he would put the check request through Martha, and depending on our budget situation, she may or may not check with me, but she approves it that way. And there's a form, I think, in your package there that may have that sort of a check request, and that's how we keep up with that, or one of the controls. And then, of course, as part of our bylaws, we require an internal audit, an outside internal audit every year. That is free and available to anyone who were to ask. And we just find that that is a great way to make sure that if there's any questions that take place from a financial standpoint, that you have somebody outside of the thing that's got an internal audit through a reputable firm or through an accounting firm. The third piece that is part of administration is human resources. And man, is this something. When I came on board, our human resources, Christine reminded me I'm recording, so I have to stay over there. One of the things that I found when I got here, that our human resources amounted to, it was all verbal. I mean, if you needed, if there was a death in the family, of course, you need to take care of that. But if you had jury duty, you need to take care of that. If vacations, if it was not a conflict, you take care of that. It's a key thing. And so we developed what we call an employee handbook that all the new hires get. And we started this about 4 years ago. We need to upgrade it. It's something that if you don't stay on top of it, you can get behind. But I put a table of contents in that package for you. When you're in an organization, these things come up as your staff grows. I mean, we have a staff now. When I came on board, it was 4. We have a staff now of 27, counting the part-time people. So as your staff grows, these questions with 27 people are going to come up from time to time. So I just give you a list, and I've got a couple of little manuals. I like small stuff that you can put in your deal. And so when somebody now has a question about things, we tell them to check the employee handbook. This was put together by myself and the senior pastor, and it works really well. Another thing, as you get to a point, your church will want to try to create some benefits for your staff. That's typically a thing that you hear all the time from other churches. And that's just a matter of doing some whatever your budget can stand. But we offer health, dental, and retire and a small retirement fund here, and we hope to build on that as time goes on. Another area C is a job description and duty roster. I think many times we say we need a preschool director, and we know that they're going to take care of the babies and they're going to be required to take care of volunteers, but there's really nothing to describe what they do. So we've developed for every position in the church is a duty roster. What am I supposed to do? Who do I report to, and that type thing. I would say if you don't have that, I would encourage you to get on board with that. And then the hiring process. I mean, as an administrator, you guys are the buck probably is going to stop with you when it comes to coordinating departments, coordinating whether a minister needs an assistant, supervising, and you don't like to talk about it, but dismissing employees. Many churches, if they got someone that needs to be dismissed, they'll find something for them to do, and they'll hang on to that person for the church. I think you're doing the person an injustice, you're certainly doing the kingdom an injustice, and you're certainly doing the church an injustice. So that's a key part that you can really come alongside a pastor and help him with, is directing your personnel, depending on what the situation is. The other thing I would challenge you that is so key, that Christina and her department has done a great job with, is that's record keeping. Guys, you just need to make sure that you have good personnel files, payroll records, vacation records, sick leave, pension, those kind of things that as a person when you go home that you think about, your staff needs to think about. It takes a little time to set up, but I think it's just so vital to the administrative side. And then did I put in your package there a little report that we designed to help us? I mean, you don't like to talk about numbers necessarily in church, but I think any effective organization that, and I'll guarantee you at some point in time, you will want to know what's taking place in department A, B, or C, or maybe your church this year compared to last year. And we tried to get it on an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper there. But this is what we do. We have every service. We have four services on this campus. And at our Raleigh campus, we have one. And through software, you can find out there, I think we have a vendor that we just went to here. I mean, there's a lot out there, people-driven software. But this is something we pull together offline. And what we try to do is measure or at least account for how many people attended this Sunday, how many attended the same Sunday last month, and the same Sunday last year. Baptisms, profession of faith, the whole thing. It's just great to know the health of your church. And we can monitor. By doing this, when you compare year to year, it helps with performance appraisals I didn't get involved with. But as your organizations grow, I think it's important that you at least meet at least one time a year with your people, let them know how you're doing. This is a great way to do it. If the church is growing 15% and your department's only growing 3 or 4, there may be some things that we can do to help boost that up. The other thing we do on the growth process is we base our salary management program on that. We have a salary management program that says that the cost of living, if it goes up 2%, that's automatic built-in. And then we have we measure how the church grows and how your department grows as another part of that salary increase. So you can use that several different ways. That's just the way we do it. Right now, I don't know if you guys are feeling the pinch like everybody else is, but we're pretty much on a spending freeze and a salary freeze and everything else trying to get through these economic times, because it's like I was telling someone today that's thinking about starting a building program. Banks, the only way you can get a construction loan in a church that's growing typically for the amount of money you need is to do it on projections. Well, our projections on our average attendee, an average attendee at C3 is somewhere between $18 and $21 per week in giving. So that means if we have 3,000 people, the giving for that week should be about $60,000. Well, that was the projection we gave to the bank. What we've seen is our attendance now is running around 3,600 people, but our giving is pretty much flat with last year. I'm sure you guys, I'm seeing some heads shaking like that, are experiencing some of the same thing. So you just have to put controls in and manage through that. That's just part of running an organization. But the other thing on the administrative side that you'll get involved with is future development plans of the church. I think it's key that you and the senior pastor work through that, so it'll help you develop contacts down the road. Capital campaigns. If you're on a building program, a huge thing to do. There's several great companies out there. We used Enjoy here. We had about four or five come in. There's Gage Group. You guys probably know about those. PDI, I believe, in Dallas. You guys know about those as well as I do. Working close with the senior staff, I would encourage you to have at least a weekly meeting with those senior people that can make decisions. And once you get into your building, or whether you're renting or whatever you're doing, I think presentation is key. And one of the things that we found is facilities management. I mean, you got to think through janitorial, repair, landscape, all that stuff, security. All that's important part of administration. And then one of the things that we found key that I would encourage you to do is really contact the media. We've had great success here while building relationships with media. If you're coming to town, starting a church, just starting doing a new program, we put out press releases, and we've been on front page of the News and Observer like two or three times in the past 3 years. Not that we wanted to be, it was just something that they chose to put out there. But I mean, how many of you know that's a way to spread the gospel? I mean, it's free advertising. So I would encourage you to do media work. I got three things that I model by that our people know about here that I've just always sort of held dear to my heart. And that has been three words, three I's. I call it intensity. Whatever you do it with some intensity. Integrity. I mean, you got to do it right and be honest. And then intelligence. Try to make good judgment in everything you do, or seek counsel and those kind of things. And Christina, I don't know if we left a business card in there or not, but I will be available at any time to help you guys or try to answer any questions. I've been through some of the knocks that you guys are probably going through in trying to get and pulling together this building and directing that and this facility and this building campaign. All this stuff that I went over that I've been working close with the pastor, but pretty much heading it up on the administrative side because this is a corporate side of the business. And I can be reached or through email at ken@c3church.com. And then another great resource is the ARC itself. You guys probably have that, but you can go online and click on financial, and they can give you some guidelines and all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of stuff out there to help you. And I tell you one thing. They talked about the heart, about throwing in the towel, about quitting, about frustration, about all those things. I'm telling you guys that are in administration probably experience all of that. And I certainly know that I do. I would just tell you to try to stay encouraged. Try to work through those things, because I found out there's really no way to explain how things happen other than God did it. And that's a great testimony too. So, man, I've been talking a lot, so why don't we take these next, 10 or 15 minutes and open it up for questions. Back in the back.
So you have written policy for your volunteers and staff to protect children, minors, from sexual harassment, molestation, things of that sort?
Yeah, that's a great question. In fact, we do. Our insurance is covered through Church Mutual. Sexual harassment of children, or that kind of whatever, is a leading complaint Church Mutual gets now from churches. So to answer your question, yes, we do. We have policies and procedures for all volunteers. Any volunteer, before they can work in a children's department, receives a background check, both legal and all that stuff, before they can go in. So yes, that's a huge thing, and I would encourage you to do that if you aren't.
Mm-hmm. You said that 35% factor on your labor. What do you include in your 35%? Do you include housing? Do you include contract labor? What are you including in your 35%?
It's the staffed employees. We do not include things like part-time, temporary part-time is anyone that works on staff 20 hours or more that would be considered a full-time, part-time person or a full-time minister. And yes, we include housing allowance, anything that has to do with that salary. That's typically a guideline, and we've been able to manage to that pretty well.
Where do you pull that 35% from? Do you pull that just from general, or is that
total budget?
Campaign and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Total budget.
Mm-hmm. No, we don't use a campaign. It's a general budget. Campaign separate. Yes, to general budget. So if your budget is $1 million, we would say when we are up to 350,000, we're where we, that's where we need to stop. That's sort of a guideline.
Is insurance included in that number too?
Pardon?
The insurance.
Benefit, yes.
Total compensation.
Yes.
Who qualifies for your benefits? It's just anybody full time, and is there a waiting period before they? Is it 20 hours or more, or just full time employees to get your benefits?
Well, different. I think companies maybe work differently in states, but we found out there's no additional charge to bring a person on for benefits day one when it comes to medical. And we just changed, there's no waiting period. So when you come on staff, you're covered.
Okay, full-time.
Full-time. Gotcha. A full-time employee.
Yeah, when you developed your employee manual, did you do that from scratch, or did you have a template you worked off of?
Well, it was a
company. My former company, let's see what this looks like.
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a combination of a lot. Some of it was from my former company that I borrowed from, some of it was from the Ark, some of it was from other churches that happen to have one. It's hard to find a church that has one. But I think most all churches now of any size almost has to have one. And it was a combination of everything. And then reviewed by an attorney.
Do you ask employees to cover part of the cost of their insurance?
Yes.
And what percentage is that?
We have a great benefit program here, I guess, thanks to me, huh, Christine? No, I don't get credit for any of it, really. But one of the things that we do is the full-time employees, we cover them completely. So it's we give them a full ride of benefit. If they want to include a spouse or children, then that's handled through a payroll deduction for that amount. So example, if the insurance coverage is $250, that's paid by the church. If they want to include a wife and it bumps to $450, they have to pay the difference. The difference, I'm talking about per month, the difference would be a payroll deduction.
So you only cover the employee then?
We cover the employee fully, yes.
Does that include lead staff as well? Main pastoral staff?
Or that's a, well, everything has an exception, right? So, for example, there's some staff that comes in that may be maybe part of their package is a full insurance coverage or some or different than our policy. And if that's negotiated and passed on, then we accommodate that through whatever.
I got you.
Yes.
What's your staffing structure? Is everybody under you? Is there just heads of departments that are under the company?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'll tell you, we have changed that since I've been here. I think we're on the at least a third or fourth change. And we've had several thoughts here, and there's several ways to do it. A lot of that depends on your senior pastor. I can tell you that. Because you can have staff structured all kinds of ways, but it needs to work for your senior pastor. And we've started out with the senior pastor's in charge. He's a general, and everything flows to him. Everything flows back up. We've tried what I call the quarterback deal. Everybody's in a circle. You got the senior pastor, but everybody shares. Ultimately, the senior pastor rules. We have recently gone to a deal where we're trying to free the senior pastor up so we meet every Tuesday, an executive team. That's myself as an executive minister. Martha, his wife, is an executive minister. Rod Gray has just come on board with a sales background, and he's our campus minister in Raleigh, and then the senior pastor. So there's four of us that meet every Tuesday. And then we talk through the business of the week or business of the future, and then that funnels down through two sides. I'm on the side of the corporate, which is the financial, which is facilities. What am I missing?
Human resources.
Hiring, firing, all those kind of things. On the ministry side, all that flows up to Martha. So his wife, so she takes care of the technology, the media, the praise and worship, the care, connect groups, all that. So her deal, I say this, if you never have more than 6 direct reports and no fewer than 3. And we try to keep it in there, balanced somewhere between 3 and 4. So as we see a department growing, for example, if technology reports to Martha, under a person in charge of technology, they may have 3 or 4 reports. So she never has more than 6 direct. So she has next generation, she has first touch, she has technology, she has praise and worship. She has like 4 departments reporting to her, and then it flows down on her. Does that answer your question? That's how we're structured now. So the senior pastor is still the CEO, but he's trying to empower the organization to function better.
What was the other person? You said his name is Steve. What's his function?
He's the campus minister in Raleigh.
Oh.
And he's a wannabe. He's on the staff, but he's new, so he's learning the ropes and that kind of thing. But he still has input, and great input.
As someone preparing for the launch and getting ready to plant a church, what kind of initial input would you have for setting your financial systems up properly before you begin to have revenue, so that way you hold yourself accountable? But what kind of things
would
you put in place?
I think you've got to have some kind of software in today's environment in a growing church. You're out of the old school deal of take the money home and count it and put it in the bank. That's my dad did at a small church of 100 people. So you've got to have, I would say, one of the first investments needs to be some kind of software. You've got QuickBooks out there. We use a system called ACS. Fellowship has a great system. There's a lot of them out there. But maybe you start small and grow into something. But you need to have some kind of record keeping, because what happens, you need a quarterly statement, mid-year statement of giving, and all those kind of things. And then we use a system called PDS to do the people tracking, where we keep up with contributions. So that's just essential. And I would do that early on, because there's all kinds of training and kind of things involved to get your numbers. One of the biggest things we have is somebody counts 100 people, and there's 110 maybe entered registered on the computer. So it's all the time a training issue. We're trying to get people up to speed so our numbers work.
Is there a percentage that you use for physical vertical construction moving church forward, or is it all capital campaign?
We will never be out of a capital campaign. If you have to go, there's 2 ways to do this. Chris Hodges, bless his heart, he hung in there at a school for like 9 or 10 years, saved his money, and had the bulk of his money that he built his building. I think it seats like 2,000 people in Birmingham. We were running 4 or 5 services, needed 6, only 600 seat place. So we were in dire need without the money in the bank to build a building. So we go to work with trying to find a lending institution that will help us. So, and your question was?
Like, is there a percentage from the weekly in the budget that's put aside for future growth?
No, we don't, other than the capital campaign.
Okay.
So we monitor that and report on that monthly. We report to our people on the capital campaign how it's doing every month. We have that's reported to the entire church. We're at 20% of our thing, should be at 30, that type thing. We're at 250,000, should be at 300,000. And our capital campaigns, we do them internally with the help of an outside source. Now we call it Kingdom Builders. Many of them are set up on, most of them are set up on a 3-year campaign. We just find it works better with us, because so many new people to re-energize every year. So we will never be out of a capital campaign. Mm-hmm.
How much do you think is an appropriate amount to have as a cash reserve?
Well, I go by my personal lesson, I guess, to at least have 3 months. You're talking about how much have you got in reserve in case of a bad time?
Just like in the bank in case of a rainy day.
Yeah, I would say 3 months. 3 months to cover something. At least 3 months to cover payroll. At least a big, great combination of payroll and if you have any debt.
Oh, okay. So you're not talking 3 months operating expenses. You work off of 3 months of... Like
yeah.
Payroll.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Things that are essential.
Fixed cost.
Essential items. And that's a moving target too. Yes.
How do you create your budget for next year, number wise? Do you just start as like 4 number?
Well, there's different rules there. We've always found our church has grown so fast since I've been here. It's been a 10 to 12% bump. What we saw last year with the economy, we didn't see any bump. What we saw was flat. So we rolled into this year with the same, whatever our giving was for last year, that was the budget we started with this year. And we may evaluate that and change it at mid-year. So
in relation to as numbers grow?
There was up until this year. But we've been in our facility a year. We're running about 3,500 people, and we couldn't build. We just didn't have enough to build because the giving didn't correlate. In other words, we got 3,600 people coming to church, but our giving was as flat as if we had 3,000 people. So we didn't feel comfortable in building a 10 or 12% increase in our budget. Just basic common sense economy. I mean, economics. Yes.
You used to enjoy stewardship for your capital fund, uh-huh. And then after that, you went to your own thing, which was a kingdom.
Yes.
And who, you said that someone outside manages that. What do you?
Well, we do it internally, but we used a company out of Tennessee, the A Group out of Tennessee. I think they're involved with capital campaigns, but that was a personal relationship.
So it's just a one-year campaign?
It's a one-year
from
campaign.
Now until.
Mm-hmm. We call it Kingdom Builders, and what we do is we promote that in November as to what the vision is. We had four this year. We had the C3 campus in Raleigh. We had missions. And next generation for improvement. We don't have our decor on the walls for the little kids. And we had financial freedom, which is paying off his debt, as our four deals. And we promote that through small groups and inside the church. And then people pledge, and then we announce what that is. And we do that. It begins in, like this year, it began in December. It'll end in November, and we'll kick the next one off in December. Yes.
Is your debt serviced only by capital campaign, or does it come also out of the general fund?
Ah, that's a good question. And that, all the above. And ideally, it would be coming from both. But I mean, it's all. I tell the pastors, just like missions, everything we do is missions. We do honor what we say on missions. But yes, it comes from both places because. Part of the Kingdom Builder is financial freedom, which allows us, if there's need, to use that capital campaign for that, because that's what it is. I mean, we have our building. And so at one time, though, all the money went toward the building fund. The first capital campaign, all the funds went towards the building fund. That's how we got in this building. But now that we're in it, we're looking to, we started a new campus. We wanted to do more in missions. We need to finish our building and those kind of things. So those were the funds. They won't come as rapid, but that's what they'll be used for.
Do you have a percentage goal for payroll and general budget to try to stick within those parameters, total percentage of general budget that you commit towards payroll dollars?
Yes, 30 to 35% of our general budget. We try to keep it under the 35. I thought we were running out of time. I don't know how many. Did those guys give you anything at the last session? They did. Well, we're not gonna give you a rock. Somebody, they know, gave somebody a rock. Then I'm gonna give them a bookmark. Will you pass those bookmarks out?
Give me the pastors and your staff. How many pastors do you have? Your staff at 27. Four.
12.
Thank you very much.
You out?
Yes. I would like to think we may get to that point, but we're doing our human resources in the financial unit, Christina and two others. And so any complaints, any problems come sort of funnel through me. The buck stops with me, typically.
I noticed you had some extra handbooks. Could I?
Sure.
Yeah,
one of those little ones.
I would like an employee handbook.
All right, good.
Could I handle that? Thank you, sir.
May I have one?
Sure. If there's an extra one, go around. If not, give me your name and I'll send you one.
Ken, you got a card?
Sure. Give me you got a card or something, I'll send you one. Or if you'll see me, I'll have a couple extras. Well, this session was too short. We were just getting rolling, huh?
Thanks,
Mike.
Send you an email?
That'd be great. Or if I see you, I'll.
What's your name?
Dawn.
Thank you. What church?
Kansas.
All right. Where are you out of?
Jacksonville, Florida.
Come on.
Yeah.
We're good. Yeah, thanks for coming. Sure.
How about your percentage of online giving?
Oh, I didn't mention. I didn't even think about online giving. That's a huge number. We've seen that puppy grow. We're doing about 20% of our giving now is online.
And we do
credit cards, and we're seeing about 5% of giving on credit cards.
Really? All right. So that's other 20. So it's 15 is, and then 5. So not 25. Not 20 plus the 5.
No, no. Online, we use a company called ServiceU. And if we have $50,000 in contributions, 20% of those are going to be online.
Okay.
And about 5 to 10% will be credit cards. In other words, we have on our offering envelope, if you want to give by credit card, a lot of people do because of points and whatever, they just fill the number out and we bring it in. So we get 5 to 10% from that.
Hey, and
just fill it out and drop it in the plate, and then you draft it out of the account?
Yeah. In fact, I'll get you an envelope. If you look in the back of one of those chairs, there should be one in there. We started that. The reason we did that is Christine Kane with Brian Houston Hillson came through, and she wanted to donate some dollars. She said, I can't believe you guys don't have credit card giving. She said, I was going to give you $1 million, and I didn't have a place to do it. And I said, we'll have one next time. So, yeah. So you live and learn. But that's a... Mm-hmm.
How about the... our bank wants us to go to the
swipe?
Yes. I mean, where the check never gets deposited, just, you know, never leaves our office, bank in a box. Do you think... Is that what y'all do, or...
No, we still do a little bit of old school. We have a scanner thing. They run checks through and it automatically posts to the account if you got the right entries in there. But I hire an outside guy to come in.
Right.
Just try to stay an arm's length away from the money.
All right.
So we have a control with ushers and all that. So they sign off any loose plate and it goes to him and he posts all the giving. And he comes in like 2.5 days a week. So to handle posting contributions and all that, and he tried the running the check through the system. He just likes to pull the name up and post it.
Okay. So when you scan your check, it doesn't automatically withdraw out of someone's account.
No.
You take and make actual deposit.
Yeah, we make a deposit with the checks to the bank. We bank with a community bank. Mm-hmm. We don't. The big boys have probably got that kind of technology, but I can assure you they don't have it. But we've been blessed to have that happen because we're probably one of the biggest contributors to that community bank, and they're just really gracious. They wouldn't do our loan because they didn't have the size. But
I see.
But anyway, that kind of technology is out there.